Moncrief on News Talk.
The recent Chelsea Flower Show was seen to what you might consider to be an unexpected comeback, the Garden Gnome. Up until this year, gnomes have been banned from there for about a century. They are tacky, they're unserious, but could they introduce a bit of fun? The garden designer Dermot Gavin joins us now to ponder this. Afternoon, Dermot.
Hi, how are you?
How did gnomes even get associated with gardens in the first place?
Well, it's interesting because they were originally associated with mining. So there were little creatures. People in Bavaria and in Switzerland in the 1500s imagined these little creatures under the soil, helping with the mining, converting stone into quartz and limestone and granite, and looking after the roots of plants and jewels. So they were always associated with having tools of some sort and imagined at a time in Renaissance Europe, I suppose, when there were all these magical, mystical things happening, they were the ones doing it underground.
Yeah. And so then how did that morph from that idea, which makes sense, to kind of this kind of tacky, colourful things in people's front garden?
What happened around that time, of course, there was a thing called, and 100 years after that, there was a thing called the Grand Tour. And all the wealthy aristocratic Brits used to go over and see all the sites, the ancient Greek and Roman sites throughout Europe. And they'd be bringing statues and buildings back to UK. That fell out of fashion after a couple of 100 years. And what people became interested in were alpine situations. So climbing places like the Matterhorn, understanding the plants that were growing there. So alpine plants growing between cracks and crevices in very high altitude. And there became a vogue for creating miniature versions of these gardens on your estate back in Surrey or wherever. And alongside them, then you have this guy, Sir Frank Isham. He had a country pile somewhere in Britain. He went over, did all this, was a fairly renowned horticulturist, brought back the plants. But what he also brought back were these miniature porcelain figures, white porcelain figures of these creatures. And after a while, he was using them in the house as placeholders for people having dinner. After a while, he looked at his version of the Matterhorn, which he had painted white at the very top to indicate his height. And he thought, wouldn't they be much better outside there? He was an interesting chap, great gardener. He was a vegetarian. He didn't believe in fox hunting, which really set him apart from all his peers. And he was a spiritualist, so he believed in other creatures. So he began to place these, first of all, the ones he had brought back, and then he began to commission new terracotta versions and put them out on what we would now know that term as a rockery. And he began to imagine them coming to life. So he was building that. Then sometime later, there was another guy, Sir Frank Crisp, who did that. Now, these were all aristocracy, industrialists, had loads of money. Sir Frank Crisp had a fascinating garden in Henley-on-Thames, which was acres and acres, and he had in that garden, he would build all different style gardens. He went one step further. So he built his Matterhorn with grottos and all sorts of things underneath. And you're coming into Edwardian times and 1890s, 1900s, 1910. He filled this place with these creatures, but then in 1910, he allowed the public in. So all of a sudden, the public were introduced to these creatures, and they weren't mining, so they weren't mining creatures they had. Actually, one of the interesting things about mining, you know what they have? They have red peaked hats. That was their version of a hard hat, because there was it was imagined that these creatures were down the line, had these peaked hats, which were soft. So if they banged the heads off anything, it would soften the blow.
Yeah.
So once Sir Frank Crisp allows people in, they begin to become very popular. And later, his family didn't like the place at all. So when he passed on, the garden went into decline. But it was purchased by one of the Beatles, George Harrison. and him and his family restored it, so it kept the norms. And actually, his wife, his widow and son still keep that going to this day.
Yeah, so I imagine all the public going into it is what made gnomes fashionable then in the wider community.
Fashionable in the wider community, much cheaper to produce. They had been produced originally in Bavaria. There were wooden creatures, then porcelain, then terracotta, and then the plastics arrived.
Yeah, and Chelsea banned the use of gnomes in 1927.
They ban and then they don't ban and then they ban. They used those headlines. So I suppose it was seen as kind of tacky. These were seen, they're statues, ornaments in a way. So just like you might have your statue of Venus or whatever in the garden, which Margot from The Good Life, who sadly passed today, might have seen that as a very correct garden statue. Her next door neighbours might have had a garden gnome, which would have been very non-new, as they say, not posh at all. And Chelsea used this. So the unbanning wasn't only this year, because I remember about 10 years ago doing a photo call with Helen Mirren at the Chelsea Flower Show when they were banned for a year or two. So they just used that as a thing to grab headlines.
Yeah. Is there anybody doing any work with garden gnomes? It's kind of hip rather than outside the usual image of
it. It's very much an eccentric garden ornament. Always was, in a way. When people began to acquire their own suburban gardens, they were cheerful little things to have a couple of them fishing in a rockery. So a garden gnome, one of these picked up. And of course, in Ireland, there was, in Ballyboden in Dublin, there was a very famous gnome garden, a small garden, which was just on a slope, which many people will remember because it became a bit of a tourist attraction. And indeed, a lady who made it appeared on The Late Late Show. And Dulux, I think, subsequently sent her gallons of paint because the house was painted pink, the roof was painted green, and all the gnomes needed sprucing up.
I've seen pictures of that. That's quite a... sight. My grandmother collected gnomes, some creepier than others. She passed away a few years ago. So when I see a gnome in people's gardens, says the text, it always makes me smile. We split our collection between us. I've only got a tiny balcony. That's because it seems to be the thing that if people collect gnomes, so that, you know, there's a huge amount of gnomes in and you wonder how much room there is for actual garden design there.
Well, not so much anymore. It was a thing in, I suppose, 70s, 80s and 90s saw a huge resurgence in this, and that's when the Ballyboden garden would have come about. It became associated with suburbia, but it also became associated with creatures in advertisements. So there was a British clothing firm called Bowden's, and a garden gnome was their thing. In the 90s and early noughties, to Philippe Starck, and other designers would have taken, would have created an ironic take on these and introduced gnomes as garden furniture. Now, not so much, because they're very much regarded in terms of gardening as they were 50 years ago as a class thing. So people want to garden upwards and be seen as being more tasteful. Mind you, if people realised they went back to Renaissance European times and they had this association with creatures under the soil, working away, looking after the roots of your plants, I think it may help to reimagine them as a species.
Yeah, but that sounds like it's a very English class associated thing you're describing.
It's very English, very class associated, and very associated with sitcoms too, I would say.
Yes, yeah. Yes, and yes, you did mention that she died today, so that probably is very apposite.
Yes.
As an example of
she
that.
Was the first, on my first day ever in television, she was the first person I ever worked with.
Really?
Yeah. We were doing a pilot for a gardening comedy quiz show. It was a week after I had done something at the Chelsea Flower Show, so I was rushed to Kew Gardens. Would I be team captain? Alan Tishmark, the team captain of the other team, and Penelope Keat, who reminded me so much of my own mother-in-law that it was scary.
Yeah. But was she anything like characters she portrayed?
She was quite like, and subsequently I was to get to work with her again, maybe about 7 or 8 years ago, on an ITV programme where I was visiting locations that had been made famous in movies or sitcoms. So I went to the location of The Manor Born and met her there and filmed with her for a day, and she was an utter delight. She was wonderful to work with.
Yeah, how extraordinary. And did she have a view on garden gnomes?
I didn't ask. I should have. It wasn't really to The Manor Born, though, where garden gnomes
I would have thought not. I would have thought not. That was fascinating. Jeremy, thanks a million for coming in to us today. You. That was the garden designer, Jeremy Gavin, there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.